Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Real Recovery. If you need some help, just like the song says, you've come to the right place. We are here to help. If you are struggling from an addiction of any kind, or you are investigating the idea that you might be suffering from something like an addiction, we want to be here to help you, and we're so glad you tuned in. Whether it was on purpose or by accident, either way, we will take it. We are just starting another award-winning show and another award-winning year. George, it's exciting to be now almost in our fifth year of doing Real Recovery. Now, 5 years ago when you started and broke into the league, your rookie year in the broadcasting business, you were fresh from Penn State. How did you feel?
I was excited.
Yeah. That's it, huh?
Still am.
All right. I expect you
How
to...
about you? How'd you feel? You were kind of natural.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd be rookie of the year. I was really surprised that you were. You surprised everybody, so congratulations.
Problem is, I haven't done a lot since.
No, but I know you like talking about your career, so I was just trying to get you going.
What day it is today. What day is it?
It doesn't matter, George. Okay. You know, your career, though, in high school was was impressive. You played goalie, didn't you, in high school hockey?
Yeah.
Had a lot of saves. I know one game in particular, you had 37. Who cares? Okay, let's move on. George, we're going to talk about Step 9 tonight, and Step 9 says we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. We want to talk about that. We want to talk about forgiveness and then the boundaries that we need to sometimes have after forgiveness happens.
I love that. We all have somebody on our list that we've had to forgive. But do we forget it? Do we go, hey? And I think for me, when Todd comes on, when I don't have a negative feeling about it, but I don't want to be with that person, I believe I forgave them, but I don't want to be around them. And I want to bounce that off him. You know, Jesus said, if we don't forgive others, we're not forgiven ourselves. And I've got a lot of things I need forgiveness for. But there's some people, there's one in particular who totally stiffed me, and I forgive him. I kind of feel sorry for him, but I don't want to be around him anymore. It kind of took the joy out of the friendship.
Now,
so
the average person might say, if you don't want to be around him, maybe you haven't really forgiven him.
Well, it's a tough one, and maybe I haven't, and I'm open to that. But the other thing is I have to respect myself, too. And it involves some money with somebody. So do I pay people to be my friends then? You know, it's a different standard for me. And I know my sponsor told me, you got to respect yourself.
And what does that mean?
Well, I think it means putting up a boundary where you don't hang around with people who treat you poorly just because you want to be caring to them. And it can be tricky. I mean, it's worse with family. And I think that's what's going to come up. For me, with my family now, I'm getting along really well with all of them. There's just one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to, spend the holidays with the guy at the holiday gas station. They get the cookies up there.
You do that every year, don't you?
I get a chuck wagon sandwich. We mm-hmm. sing a song, and then I go back home and turn on the game. So it's working. But I think for a lot of people, there are relationship issues around this time of the year.
You're a lonely, lonely man.
I'm a sad man, Bill. Very sad. Just me and my weapons.
Oh, in Luke 6:28, nice transition, Bill. Give and it shall be given you, a good measure pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. That talks about forgiveness and making amends.
I have never known what that meant.
Oh, I don't either, George. If
anybody
wants to call
press
in.
Anything down and shift it around, it's kind of like the hokey pokey Bible verse. I don't know what it means, but I know Todd well when he gets on.
He may or may not. But with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. And I don't know what that means either. That's that's Luke 6:38.
Glad you read it then. Neither one of us know.
Glad I brought it up.
Yep.
It helps bring the show to a grinding halt.
Merry Christmas,
thank
Bill
you,
Arnold.
George. Yeah, even though that's already happened. All right, George.
It's going to happen again next year.
Of course it is.
This year.
Of course it does. But, there is the problem with forgiveness where someone has done something so egregious, and then they want to be instantly vindicated and released from all guilt, and we can do that. But like you say, family members, loved ones, then may have to create a self-preservation boundary so they don't allow themselves to be brought back into a con game or deception. I can't remember who said it. Maybe it was Churchill. I don't know who said it, but it said, I don't mind the fact that you lied to me. What bothers me is that I can never trust you again.
I get that. I think a lot of it is, if I'm truly sorry about something, I don't do it anymore. But I also try to make an amend to make it right. If I borrowed money from you and stiffed you and said, hey, Bill, I'm really sorry about the money. Don't have it right now. I'm going to go on vacation, but, you know, I'm sorry about it. I don't know about that. And I think we can do our part and forgive that person, but go, hey, you know, I'm not going to get drawn into this again. And I think it gets to be a gray area because there's some self-respect. I know biblically I'm supposed to think of people as better than I am, which is very hard for me, but that doesn't mean to mistreat myself at the same time. And I think there can be a false forgiveness of, you know, that's okay, Bill, just keep doing it to me because 70 times 7, you know, we just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't think so. I think this will be a real good topic, and I think we should get as quickly as we can, you know, to sort these out because it's very important.
Yeah, but George, I don't know. Usually we get on a roll, and then we bring on the guest time permitting, if we have time to bring on the guest.
Right.
But I want to just back up a little bit and say, all right, so you're bothered that this guy didn't pay you back, and why is the money so important? God's money anyway, right?
It's not, you know what? To me, it's not the money.
Oh, it's always the money when you say it's not the money.
No, it's not the money. It's the principle of the fact of not attempting to repay it due to I don't have it, and it's like that's okay, isn't it? It's kind of like going, you know, the other night, and I went through this a lot. You know, when I said that to you when I was drunk, you're not serious about that. I mean, if you took that seriously, I think that's your problem. I kind of feel sometimes with issues that people can spin that when they do something wrong, that if I'm not okay with it, it's my problem. And that's where I'm going. I think you can forgive people, but, you know, not forget about it I think for me, and I want to ask Todd this, it's about the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
If I get angry when I think about it rather than sad, I think maybe I'm still holding a grudge. But if I get sad about it, you know, there's a loss of a friendship. I thought we were a little better here. And I don't wish anything well or, you know, anything but good things for the person. But I don't want to hang around a person who does that and mm-hmm. hasn't made reparations. So mm-hmm. that's where I'm coming.
So some conditions to friendship. There's some things that we do to keep ourselves safe. You know, and this is the boundaries we're going to talk about with Todd Mullican, our guest tonight. We're going to bring him on in just a minute. But the boundaries that we get to or we have to create for our own safety, are they doing us more harm than good? Or what's your feel on that before we get to Todd, George?
Well, that's the question. I believe in my life that I need to hold myself to the same standard I hold other people to. Is when I wrong somebody, I ask them for forgiveness. I ask God for forgiveness. But what can I do to make it right? And do I really feel sorry about what I did, or am I sorry I got caught? You know, and I need to.
That's a big one.
I need to acknowledge that. But the other thing, being on the other side, is yeah, I've messed up as much as anybody, and I do believe I have to forgive others if I'm going to be forgiven, and I might have to pray to God to do it because it's kind of fun to have a grudge. There's a little power there. There's a little adrenaline, and I do kind of like that. I gotta own that. But that's not what the Bible says. Jesus wants me to, but the unconditional love, I don't know. Does that mean not loving myself too? And that's a gray area.
Mm-hmm. So when it talks about making amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, let's say person A who owes you money that you're referring to comes and says, hey, George, I'm really sorry about the money that I didn't really pay back. And it doesn't look like I'm going to really get to pay you back, but I hope you're okay with that. Sorry.
I always think there's something you could do, like $1 a week. $1 a week.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm truly sorry about it, I try to make it right. That's my opinion.
Okay. $1 a week.
Okay, that's a little low in case you're listening to this. But no, that's what I mean. And I know I've had to pay people back, and maybe I didn't have it all at once. But here's the deal. If you borrowed money from somebody mm-hmm. and you didn't pay them back and your life goes on, la-da-da, you're not hurting about anything, you've hurt somebody else. You should share in that suffering, I think, by maybe taking some money out of your paycheck and paying them back.
I'm with you on that. All right, we're going to talk to Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina. He's going to help us sort through step 9 about forgiveness and about setting up boundaries where we can live in a healthy way and also be full of grace. You're listening to Real Recovery, Bill, George, Alex, tonight. We hope you're having a great weekend. Be back in just a minute. As his arm had reached around, oh, and she looked at the window.
Mimi! Yeah. Mimi!
What?
Come on, Mike.
All right.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. Bill, George, Alex in studio tonight. We've got in with us Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling, a regular guest on the show and a man who helps us sort through the heavy issues of the 12 steps. And tonight we're on step 9. And, George, nobody knows these steps better than you. Remind the audience one more time what that says.
Made direct demands to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
All right. Todd, help us start to dissect this a little bit. Forgiveness, huge, huge issue in recovery. And a lot of people need to do it, and a lot of people need to hear it. And it's not an easy subject.
Well, Philip Yancey, you guys know him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one of his older books, What's So Amazing About Grace, in there it says, the only thing harder than forgiveness is the alternative. And so that is if you and I are living with the resentment, the bitterness, not really letting go and forgiving somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I really tuned into what George said, though, when we're forgiving somebody, it's good that we're doing that as God forgives us. But if that person is continuing a pattern of hurtful behavior towards us, then it doesn't really make sense to continue to allow that behavior to happen because it's not helping the other person because they're doing something that's injurious to them, you know, in their own issues. That's why they're doing that towards you. And it's also not helping you to continue to be treated that way into your terms of self-respect. So that's when we start to try to set up boundaries. And I've got a series of those I usually have people go through.
Mm-hmm. When I look at cartoons in the paper, like political cartoons or people that do caricatures, they'll usually take one feature on somebody and blow it way out of proportion.
Mm.
And you go, oh, there's the big nose or the big ears or something like that, because the person might have big ears and they make them huge. And sometimes it seems that if you are in a relationship where perhaps you've lied, that becomes the dominant feature. That's all they see is, oh, here's the lying person.
Yeah.
And that still needs to be dealt with, and it needs forgiveness, and it needs repentance. But how does the person stop seeing the other person as the liar?
Right.
When, in fact, they have been.
Yeah, I mean, good point. Usually what you find, one of the books I wrote was on adultery and why people have affairs. And so a lot of times what happens is I'm working with a couple, and the one who's been cheated on, let's say the person who cheated on them is really trying to do step 9, is make amends to their spouse and really wanting to heal from that and really offering their forgiveness and wanting to be all in and wanting. And that other person who doesn't forgive that person over time usually shows their own insecurity or their own inadequateness. They want to punish the other person. And that's the spirit that we don't want to have.
Mm.
You know, we want to make sure that even if worst case scenario, this person is continuing to do behavior towards us that's hurtful, we can still forgive them, because what I think forgiveness is about is understanding. So I understand this addict in my family, even though they've done step 9, they're back in treatment, they're drinking again, and here we go again. Well, I may not be close to that person. I may set up the boundary, what I call loving detachment. And I first have had an honest conversation with them about how their behavior hurt me, but I'm going to still try to break bread with them at some point and have what I call a lovingly detached relationship where I protect myself, but I may still have interactions with them.
So we're becoming less vulnerable? Is that kind of what's happening?
Yeah, and usually you can tell. You know, you can just tell if a person is this an incident of a behavior or is there a pattern of behavior? You know, that person who took the money from you, George, was that an incident or is that a pattern? You know, and if it's an incident, usually that person is going to want to make it right, you know. But if it's a pattern of behavior in their life, it's usually you're not the first person that's happened to, and they have a pattern of behavior. And for you to do 70 times 7, I think that's when we take Scripture out of context and just kind of put one verse. You know, we hear turn the other cheek, right?
Right.
And so how did Jesus turn the other cheek to the Pharisees? Last time I checked, he didn't. Last time I checked, he was very direct and said, hey, guys, here's the deal. You know,
sure.
Does that make sense? So I think we can do smorgasbord Christianity and pull out verses, in my opinion. So I think, what's the truth? I always say, what's the truth about that situation? If the truth is this person owed you money, but and they're really generally a good person, and they've tried to make it right, and it wasn't a buck a week, like you said, but you can see their spirit is trying to make it right, that should be good enough for the person. You know, the person who was cheated on, if their spouse is really, really remorseful, it was a one-time thing, they're really doing the work, they're really trying, but that person continues to see that person with big ears, then that's on them. Then you can usually tell they have an unforgiving heart. And I've usually found that that's gone back to their upbringing, where they were shamed a lot as a kid. And so they have a heart, when they feel disagreed with, they feel attacked, and they can't forgive. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, each case is different, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the deal? Is this an incident, or is this a pattern of behavior?
Mm-hmm.
And in any way we look at it, we have to have an honest conversation with that person. You're doing that with step 9, right? You're having an honest conversation with the person you've wronged. And Mike, you're trying to make amends to them, right?
That's absolutely right. I got forgiveness in step 5, and I think that's a big part. If I'm on the offending end, which I have been most of the time, I want to get forgiveness from God, so I don't need your forgiveness. What I'm doing is, I'd like it. I'm sorry I did this,
right?
But how can I make it right?
Mm-hmm.
And that might require some sacrifice on my part. And I do believe if you're not willing to do this, and in the case on the other end for me, I've been on both ends of this. I mean, I committed adultery, but I loaned money. And I'm sitting here thinking, I don't want to look down on the guy who hasn't paid me back, because I really like the guy, because I'm an adulterer.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
That makes his thing look kind of small.
Yeah. Yeah.
But on the other hand, I stopped doing that, tried to make amends, don't mm-hmm. do it anymore. And on the other end, for me, and I know I was forgiven,
mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, for that person, I don't hold a grudge against them. I just kind of wish they'd pay me, because it's insulting when I see them, you know, that nothing's said about it. And I feel kind of stupid.
Yeah, so you have the honest conversation, and if the truth is the behavior hasn't changed,
right,
then I think we go to that second boundary of what I call loving detachment, where you're respectful and cordial. You're just not as close, because that family member is continuing to do the behavior of narcissistic edges of, you know, being dominating or shaming or whatever. And then
right.
And then if we don't do that pattern differently, then our kids are in my office in 20 years, you know, doing the same thing that they see their parents doing. So I think the loving detachment is a good place to go. And if there's further abuse from that person who hasn't paid you back the money and they're continuing to do more injurious behavior, then I think we go to a separation as our third boundary, where we do not spend time with that person unless we get in front of a third party and we have some type of mediated restoration process.
Part of the thing where I've gotten in my life is, this person might not be capable to do this.
Right.
And
right.
That eliminates a lot of the emotional charge for me that I think, like myself, most of us do as well as we can. We try, and maybe in this case, that person, they just can't connect the dots. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, and so we don't, by me holding that against that person, that's kind of on me, and then I'm
right.
doing what Yancey said. You know, the only thing harder than forgiveness is the alternative. I got this chip on my shoulder, and I'm, you know, it's leaking out somewhere in my life. So I love what you're saying, where I have to have understanding, hey, that person just might not be able to come up, if you will, with that buck a week, emotionally or literally.
Yeah, and I think we all do that, don't you, Bill?
Yeah.
Getting kind of angry over there.
No,
Are we going down memory lane with our relationships or what?
No,
just
we're
because
not.
He's got his arms folded doesn't mean he's angry, George. So.
Yeah.
And I'm very tense right now.
Yeah. I like this. This is good stuff. I want to be open to the fact, too, that on both ends of this,
it's important to look at both ends.
Yeah, but we've been on both ends. Most
right.
of us have.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I don't do this well, because frankly, if you do something to me, I want to nuke you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part. We had Dr. Glenn Pickering on here a couple weeks ago, that we get two thoughts with everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I want to follow God, or do I want to follow my own thoughts?
Yeah.
So I'll talk to Todd. He seems friendlier. Can you come back next week for a show on anger?
You're in touch with it, though. Very
self-aware. I can feel it coming across through the bulletproof glass. I hope it's bulletproof.
Oh, it is. I've tested it.
Okay.
unfortunately.
But, Billy, we've been on both sides of this thing, haven't we, in our relationships?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, it's not fun.
And I think a lot of the times when I'm on the, you know, injuring person side, I'm not aware of it all the time.
True.
Because I always think what I do is right. So there's a responsibility, I think, Todd, that when we're injured, to let the person know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have that first boundary, an honest conversation. And in that honest conversation, we try to speak without offending, and we try to listen without defending. And we just try to stay in there and be, you know, the hands and feet and prepare ourselves for that honest conversation. It may not go well, but at least we're going to do our part to be the hands and feet in there.
That's tough. It might not go well.
No, it usually doesn't. You know, when you're with somebody that's injured you, or if they don't have ears to hear that we really are sorry because they still view us as having big ears, you know, then it probably won't go well.
Mm-hmm.
They'll probably overreact. And then we think we're outside of God's will because it didn't go well. And I usually reassure people, it doesn't mean you're outside of God's will if it doesn't go well, because, you know, the gospel isn't full of parties. You know, it's kingdom life can be messy sometimes. So as long as your motive was pure to make the amends as best as you can, right, as best as I can, the best I can do is make amends to that person and say, you know, I am truly sorry. Like with my youngest daughter, one time I got in this process when she was a little kid of using a silent treatment against her. And that had happened to me in my upbringing. And so I didn't realize that until one day I realized, I'm doing that to Sarah.
Wow.
So at about age 9, her and I were having one of our mutual hissy fits. You know, I said to her, you know, I am so sorry for just giving you the silent treatment, and I want to make, you know, this promise to you, I'll never do that again. And it just opened up our relationship, but I had to have that understanding first. And then my motive was pure when we'd be in an argument. I would, you know, I'd usually realize I'm not trying to do this silent treatment against her. So that's the best you and I can do when we're at step 9, isn't it? Is to know our heart is in the place we want it to be. We're making amends. And if that's not good enough for the other person over time, then that usually means the other person has a hard time with forgiveness. And we can't hold that against them, but that happens a lot.
Sure. And my job is to take care of my side of the street.
Now
we can do. We have to kind of go to step 10 here, which is continue to take our inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it, and then go back and look at 8, 9, where we make a list of all people we'd harmed, and become willing to make amends to them all.
Nice. All right. Now, Todd, we talked about the need for forgiveness. That's going to be step 1. Step 2, I want to talk about the timing of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I think its timing is critical when someone needs to hear I'm sorry and needs to get an amend. But I also think it's important that that person be a participant in the amend. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes I have seen and heard from experience that when a person wants to make an amend, they just barge in and make it.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. They weren't ready to hear that yet.
Yeah. Yes.
And is it fair to say you could call that person and say, I know I need to extend an apology to you. Are you in a place where you can receive it?
Well, that's a great tweak.
I mean, is that a good first step?
That's a wonderful step, because it shows that you're not, you know, it's kind of like people that say, well, I want to tell my kids about all of our marital issues we're having, or, you know, I just got to get this off my chest, or, you know, because
it's still about you.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Versus having the empathy. I think empathy is one of the greatest gifts we can, you know, pray for, and it just trumps everything. It trumps narcissism. It trumps codependency. It trumps everything. So I love what you're saying. It's leading out with that non-offensive framework.
Well, it's the one thing I've thought of that I would put in a book if I wrote one, but I'd never write a book. I'd maybe write a pamphlet.
That'd be fine.
Or a flyer.
Yeah.
And that would be what I'd put on my flyer.
My second and third books were like that. They were like 60 pages. So, yeah. I wrote it for guys.
You don't have to do too much for guys.
Right.
But it seems that the timing of stuff is a critical component, and I don't know how well we do that. And I think it's something that is probably worth having further discussion on.
Well, I think you bring up a really, really solid point, and I'm not so sure it's just timing. I think it's about selfishness. If I'm making an amend to you, I want to get this done. I want to get it off of my chest, and you might not be ready to hear it. That doesn't enter in, and I'm being selfish again. And usually the reason I did what I did to you was I was being selfish at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to make amends, I want to make sure that I'm bounced it off my sponsor and God, that it's not all about me. And I also want to be ready to try to make things right. If I borrow some money from you, Bill, which never would happen, I don't know if you have a wallet or not, but if you did and I borrowed money, I would make sure that I could start paying you back. I wouldn't just go to, hey, you know the money I owe you? Really sorry about it. You're not mad about that, are you? Because I'm sorry about it. Okay, good. Can we hug now? And then you leave, and there's no plan to pay you back.
Well, there should be a plan to pay me back.
It'd be one of those hugs where you're 4 feet away from each
right.
other. But that's selfish, right?
It's very selfish. We're going to continue this conversation because this is important topic. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George in studio with Todd Mullican. Don't go anywhere. We got lots more. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George are in studio tonight. We are in with Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina, and we're talking about step 9, where you make amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And as we were talking about forgiveness, which is necessary, that we then shifted into the timing of forgiveness. And now I want to talk a little bit more about the tone of forgiveness, because the tone that we use can sometimes be nice and effective, or it can be offensive and make things worse.
So if you and I are operating from what I call an inside-out perspective, our inside is healthy with the Lord, then we're going into that situation with the person we've injured and asking for forgiveness. And if it's not the right time for them, like you queued up earlier, Bill, then say, hey, if it's not the right time, you know, that's okay. Let me know when it is. And if they're a healthy person, they'll see your motive was pure there, and they'll get to that sooner than later. You know, if they hold that against you for 400 years and you realize they're, yeah. So that's the key is making sure your timing is leading out with a healthy kind of process there. And then we're having an honest conversation from a place of empathy versus a place of, I got to get this off my chest so I feel better. What George was saying earlier about selfishness, you know?
Yeah.
If I'm coming from a pure place and I'm okay if they're not ready for it.
Yeah, I forgive people all the time. I'm doing it right now, you know, and I think...
Who needs forgiveness?
Everybody does.
Okay, George.
Everybody, you know. I think this is really important. We were talking on the break a little bit, and Bill's wickedly funny on the break. And when we're on the break, we were talking about how we've each been on both sides of this and how important that timing is. Because otherwise it's selfish. And if I'm not ready to... Well, take care of it. It's selfish.
And I have to be okay if the other person isn't ready. If I'm not okay with it, then it shows that I'm in a place of inadequacy or in this narcissistic edge of needing to be right, needing to win. You know, the restlessness of anxiety just makes me want to get it off my chest so I feel better versus I'm content enough to know that God's God and I'm not. I blew it.
Right.
I'm at a place of healthy remorse. I hurt this person. And they might not be ready for a while, and I can be patient with that. So I think that's important to do if we're on the offender side, is modeling that conversation from a place of healthy timing and at least leading in with a good tone, like Bill said. And that's the best we can do from our inside out. And if that's not good enough over time, then I have found, at least in my counseling, that's usually going to show that the other person is operating from some place of inadequacy or demanding nature. So when we lead out well, in most cases, that will bring forth a decent restoration over time.
So if I'm not willing to do that, in either tone or timing, perhaps I'm still being selfish. And the root of why I did what I did in the first place, I probably want to look at that, huh?
Right. And typically with the addict is we have lots of impulsivity in this, you know, we do stuff before we really process it. And so the impulsivity of the addict has to slow the game down and, you know, bring the Holy Spirit into it and say, okay, what's my truth and what's the other person's truth, and not get clogged with, you know, lots of fears, but just, hey, let me do the best I can in Christ to lead out well here.
And so you're I'm saying that well. Sometimes we don't process it before we do it. If I'm going to do God's will, it can't be selfish. And maybe a good check here for us when we're going to make an amend is, am I really doing this to get it off my chest, as you said, or to help other people,
right,
and to clear the deck, you know? And that's a real good self-check, because I got to tell you, the reason part of the reason I do it is I feel guilty and I want to get rid of it.
And how about the people that are on the other side of the coin? So now, because, you know, I'm thinking of the show and thinking of all the people listening that have received a step nine from their spouse towards them, or received a step nine by their father or mother towards them. And how are they doing with really forgiving the addict in their family, or forgiving the person that has done something injurious to the family? And so what is that like for them? Because I think that's a lot of what people are having to deal with, is how do I deal with somebody who has really wronged me, and how do I forgive that person?
Well, don't you have to give up kind of the power of being a victim too?
You do. I think you have to say, well, what's the truth here? Is he or she, you know, I'm hearing their honest cry here for forgiveness, and I can do that. I can let that go. And then I have to look at my own patterns in my life. Have I been run over by a truck for the last 30 years by the person I've been with? Then I need to set a strong boundary and have some detachment from that person until we get help together. If the truth is, no, this was an incident, this person got off track, they took a left turn for a year, and they've really been out of it for different reasons, but they're back on track, and then I need to, you know what I mean? So each case is so different, but we have to look at our own heart and hear Yancey's voice saying the only thing harder than forgiving that person is the alternative. So I work with people all the time about letting that go. And the best thing I've worked with is have an understanding of why they did that. You know, you can understand why they're an addict for these reasons. Doesn't mean you have to break bread with them every day now, but they have been an addict, but they're in recovery. They're doing their part well, and you see that. And so giving the gift of forgiveness, of course, is first for themselves and forgiving you as God has forgiven them. But it also helps them, too, clear their own deck.
Right. I think part of this for me, guys, is in my Christian walk, I have to give up a lot of what I call my rights. In a relationship, when somebody's coming to me to make an amend, I got to give up my right to hold that against them and kind of have some superiority. Because to be gut-level honest, there's a part of me that kind of likes having something on somebody, you know, in my worst moments. Sure. And I got to be willing to give that up, don't I?
Absolutely. And then, of course, when we do, then... You know, usually we have some sense of God that, you know, that made sense to do. And then we can go out and play a little bit more freely. So I invite the people who have been injured to think of what forgiveness looks like, but also then to set boundaries.
Okay, so, how do we do that?
So make sure you have that honest conversation in step nine. You're being step nined on, if you will. And you're
like
not,
that.
And you're either ready or you're not ready. But either way, you're finally having a conversation. Well, make sure you get off your chest what you're holding and what you're frustrated with, and then share what you need. So I always say, share your feelings and then make a request. So the person who's been injured needs to make a request, you know, and if I see that behavior again, I'm going to need to separate, or I'm going to need to spend less time, or, you know, whatever their situation is. They need to set a boundary. So in that honest conversation, mm-hmm. we're setting the table so that if that behavior continues, we go to the step, my next step, which is loving detachment, where I'm going to be loving and respectful, but I'm just not as close. Because I'm continuing to get hurt. And in loving detachment, we're protecting ourselves. And I have often found that we're really not helping the other person by just continuing to let that behavior continue towards us anyway.
Sure. You're enabling them.
You're enabling, exactly.
Yeah. I think what Bill said's right. The timing has to be right, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not an automatic, yeah, let's do it.
No, I'm in full agreement on that. And the tone is important. And Todd, I'm wondering, is there ground rules that you can share with two people who need to have this communication session, if you will, because if someone starts to make an apology and all it does is ramp up someone else's emotion and energy, and then they start talking over each other and start cutting off each other's sentences, and all of a sudden I start to feel blood pressure and pulse go up, and now I'm thinking this thing is a disaster.
Yeah.
Are there ground rules for pulling this off successfully?
Well, you know, the best we can do, I mentioned a couple of them earlier, so I'm going to come into that. If I'm doing step nine, I'm going to try to speak without offending. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say, hey, these are the things that I want to make amends to you for, and I can't begin to tell you how sorry I am, but tell me how you see it. So that's a volley over to them. Mm-hmm. That isn't just saying, hey, I'm getting this off my chest, please listen up, it's all about me. You know, I'm volleying it over to them. If I know I'm going into that session and I'm the one who's been injured, I've got to make sure I come in there with my best self, too, in Christ, and say, hey, this person is trying to make an attempt And I haven't told them I'm not ready, so I maybe need to tell them that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I haven't been ready for 20 years, so I got to be ready sometime. So I want to bring my best self here. So I'm going to try to listen to what they have to say without, you know, snapping back and running to the top of Anger Mountain, I call it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the scriptures say, in your anger, do not sin. The scriptures say, don't give full vent to your anger. So how do I listen without defending? So this person says this to me, then I can say, you know, I'm not ready to hear this yet. Or, you know, yeah, when that happened, that was really hard for me. And I think I'm still in that stuff, and I'm not ready to have this conversation. Or, you know, I've been ready to have this conversation for a while. I'm still really angry about it. That's very non-defensive. That's just healthy. Then the person, you know, who's doing the number nine better not say, well, why aren't you ready? And, you know, so this better be their time to say, I get it. And so we just have that mutual empathy of volleying in a non-offensive, non-defensive way, and maybe even agree to disagree sometimes, you know? So, I mean, these aren't perfect conversations. They never are. But that's what I'm trying to say is try, you know, back when we're raising kids and when we're young, we always learn the best thing we can learn how to do is self-regulation. Regulate our engine. Make sure our emotions don't run too hot, and don't make sure we don't suppress them too much. That's why Jesus came full of both truth and grace. So try to go in those conversations with a healthy mix of truth and grace. It's the best we can do.
Let's say I've been offended, and I come into this session because I'm offended, and I think I'm going to be hearing an amend, and I kind of secretly want a piece of flesh,
right?
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Is there any wisdom in offering a piece of flesh? Like, boy, I know you must have been very mad at me, and you had every right to kick me to the curb. And I know how you feel on some level, not entirely. And then start the apology that way. Is there any helpful?
It's
is that helpful at all?
It's a wonderful tweak.
Well, I'm just.
No, it is. I mean, it's coming in with a lot of vulnerability and a lot of empathy. You know, so when we lead out non-offensively, that's kind of what I was saying. But how do you see it? You know, We're not saying this is all about me. We're saying, but how do you see this situation? But you could even do what you're saying.
Yeah, because the worst thing is when the person who's making the amend tells you how you should be feeling.
Oh, nothing worse.
Oh, that's...
It's just get on your Pharisee cap. You know, it's like, it's just, here we go. You know, they should be reading John Fisher's book, The 12-Step Recovery from Being a Pharisee. Yeah, and those are the people that are throwing stones, and that's, we don't need that.
And then I think of the ultimate model of forgiveness, where the prodigal son is returning from a life of complete debauchery. He's spent all of his money. He stinks. Well, I mean, not like George, but I mean, he, because that's the cologne thing, which I don't really work.
Brute.
Brit's brute, yeah.
It's brute, yeah.
So,
didn't that go away 10 years ago?
Longer than that. George has got a lifetime supply.
Real men still wear it.
Yeah, I understand. That's how you feel, George. But anyway, the prodigal son comes back, and the father runs out and throws his arm around him and kisses him on the cheek before he even says, Dad, I'm sorry. I mean, there's the illustration of ultimate forgiveness. And I look at that, and it brings tears to my eyes, but I can't picture being that way.
Totally, yeah.
Because it's too messy.
No, I know. But maybe the truth is God is saying to us, hey, the father understood his kid, right? Just like God understands us. That's why I think forgiveness is about understanding. So I understand this addict in my family, and I understand which side of the road they've been on and their struggles, and I get it. So I'm in a place of forgiving them wholeheartedly, but then Jesus said what? Go and sin no more.
Sin no more.
Right? So there are boundaries there after that. So I think it's great to be how the Father was, and that's how we know God is towards us. And that's what we're shooting for with the people that have wronged us, which doesn't mean we have to continue the relationship of of being hurt. It just means we're powerful and confident enough in our own walk with Christ to have those open arms. And I think that's a little bit of what you were asking about earlier with unconditional love.
Yep.
You know, which I know it sounds kind of, you know, hot or, you know, over the top, but when we're in that position, like the father is towards his son or daughter, then that's a powerful position to be in a good way, you know, because we're confident enough in who we are to know that we all mess up. You talked about that for you earlier. You know, we all make mistakes on both sides of the coin.
Well, you need the mercy.
It's a great word.
But you also need the grace of God to share mercy in that he forgave me, so I'm going to forgive you. And I think I need to realize that I can't expect to have people show me mercy unless I get the grace of God so I can do it.
Yeah. And then when we get that, then we understand why people can't sometimes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean we have to continue to receive that behavior that's hurtful towards us. And I think that's where sometimes believers mix up the 70 times 7. You know, they think, let's do 70 times 7, so 490 times I can get hit over the head with a club, you know, and keep this alcoholism in my home. because God told me to forgive that 460th time. Well, go and sin no more, too. You know, so offer forgiveness, but here's what I need, and here's the boundaries. So I'm speaking to the person that's been injured. How do they have that honest conversation, but how do they set some good boundaries and do that with good tone?
Well, I don't do well with shoulds. Like, I should be nicer to this person, even though they totally stiffed me. How about, God, help me to forgive them. I say the resentment prayer. This is a spiritually sick person. God, keep me from being angry. Where can I be of service? Get it unto God. But respectfully Wonderful. Take that boundary and go, I'm not going to keep – it's like opening the door and there's a guy with a baseball bat there. Right. And every time you open it, he hits you in the head. And then you go 3 months later, well – that wasn't as bad as it could have been. I'm going back in and dunk, and then you're back.
And you're enabling the bully by doing that.
I was still on me, but thank Sorry. You. Yeah.
I was trying to get it off you, because I know we're running out of time. So
yeah,
I thought
that
to
one show. But that's fair, isn't it?
That was really good. Yeah, absolutely. Well,
obviously, I got hit one too many times. But, yeah.
Let's deal more with George after the break. That'll keep the readers or the listeners on
the
board.
The readers?
No, I meant listeners. Cut me some slack, George.
I forgive you.
Thank you so much. Look at that, Amanda. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, to all you readers and listeners out there, you're going to get more of Real Recovery in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Tonight we're talking about Step 9. We're talking about forgiveness. And so far we've covered a little bit about the need to forgive and then the timing and tone of forgiveness in segment 2. And now we're going to sort of wrap up all the loose ends. We're talking to Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling Center in Edina. Todd, I have a question about the feeling that we all have in relationships to be safe. For some reason, I think the word safe keeps coming up in my head in tonight's conversation. And we protect safety to a real high degree. And then when we get vulnerable and we start risking, our safety gets a little bit tenuous, and then we get all nervous and upset. Mm. I don't even know if there's any truth to that. I just said it.
Oh, you hear that word all the time now.
Safety?
Yeah, I need to feel safe.
Oh,
I need
okay.
to feel safe. I need to feel safe. So very relevant topic.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think it has to do with what's our attitude, though, in that safety. Is my safety coming from a place of confidence and contentment in Christ? Then I realize I'm going into a situation that won't be that safe, but I'm a safe person, and I'm going to keep my boundaries up and try to speak without offending and listen without defending and be the hands and feet, and here we go. So mm-hmm. I can come into that conversation where somebody's doing step 9 towards me. I think, I can't remember, I've been on a few times, but I tell you the garage door guy conversation? Remember that one?
Oh, so, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, so he was in sobriety for 15 years, and but he never talked to his kids in 15 years, and he told me, well, they have my number, and they never called. And he said, what should I do? I said, well, call your kids. Pursue them as God pursues you. And so he was never in a situation where he actually, and then he said later on, he said, I don't feel safe talking to him. I said, well, how do you think they feel? Their dad hasn't talked to him for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can use that safe term in a way that sometimes makes us not take that next step of growth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say there's need for an amend or for forgiveness, and the problem is so severe that you need a mediator, i.e.
Right.
someone like you.
Right.
And the idea of coming into your office already has me not liking you or whoever you are. Talk a little bit about the role that plays in this process.
Well, and usually in those cases, we're at that third boundary I talked about, which is separation. So now there hasn't been any contact for a while.
Okay.
And the person doesn't feel safe enough unless there's a third party there. And I've had plenty of those situations. And then what I try to do in those situations is make everybody feel aligned and safe that we're going to try to hear from all parties and act respectfully. And I talk about speak without offending, listen without defending. But what those people brought to that meeting is going to be so important.
Mm.
Are they praying it up? Are they praying for contentment? Or are they coming from a place of vengeance?
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell over time what their spirit is like and where they're really at.
Yeah. And when new wounds are also old wounds.
Yeah.
Because old wounds, if they're never dealt with, are still new wounds, aren't they?
Right. Well, they're new wounds if the pattern continues.
Right.
So I say to people, the past is called the past because it has passed.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not live back 30 years ago. But if the truth is the old patterns are still happening, then the past is still here. And that's when we need to set boundaries. So the person who's been cheated on is still being cheated on. So let's set the boundary. The person who has alcoholism is in the home, the person still using, let's set the boundary because the past is still the current.
Okay, and we don't want to go to Anger Mountain, but we don't want to go to Victim Valley either.
Well,
because
like
some people, yeah, I just kind of came to me.
Three-point shooter.
Kind of came to me. Because there are some people, and, and I've done this, where I like being a victim forever, and they haven't come to me. At what point do I have the responsibility, Christian responsibility, to do my part to work through this?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, in my opinion, that's when we look at the 70 times 7 and think, well, how am I doing with forgiving this person who has done this in the family for 30 years? You know, I can either be victimized and see a therapist for 400 years about how horrible this was to me, or I can say, what am I learning from this, and how am I doing in my family now to make sure that pattern isn't repeating itself? Or how am I doing with having a conversation with that person again? Which doesn't mean it'll be restored. It may not go well, but I'm out of victimization, and I'm in this moving forward in my own story with God's help.
Okay. It's something that I've got to take apart and choose. Okay, do I want to keep being a victim, or do I want to change that?
Right.
And I need God's help to do it. And maybe I have to pray to even want to do it. Fair?
Fair. Very fair. Yeah, because it's much easier to feel like this. It's much easier to blame, I think, than take accountability. It's much easier to point the finger and just have a blast with that and just talk to our buddies about how horrible this has been, and versus, yeah, this is what's going on in my life, and here's a person who's asking me to forgive them. I'm not ready for it. Okay, well, when are you? You know, what's your next step? And that's why it's nice to have that sponsor who can lovingly hold your feet to the fire and say, well, what is your next step here?
He doesn't lovingly do anything with me.
But I was trying to balance out the holding your feet to the fire.
Actually, he's a psychologist. You know how mean those people are. Yeah. So
that was actually pretty interesting what you just said, George. Oftentimes when you talk, I'm on Board Boulevard. But this whole thing about, you know, Victim Valley, I thought that was kind of interesting. That caught my attention. As we're talking about what to do, making an amend, except when to do so would injure them or others, what about when it's a spin of the dice? As like, this isn't going to injure them. Then it turns out it does.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you know? Where do you get discernment to know? How do you make that step?
I think I loved what you said earlier, Bill, about saying, you know, is offering that conversation and saying, are you ready to have this conversation yet? I think that is just leading forward with a loving empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Then that person has a chance to say if they're ready or not.
Yeah, they can be an active participant
in
this
that decision. Right.
That way it's not a one-sided plow.
Right. Now, if the person isn't ready for 25 years, then we realize that person's got the issue.
Right.
But if the person is eventually ready, that's as good as that can get. And that's spot on, Bill. That's good.
I like that.
Yeah. That's just reasonable, and that's real recovery right there.
I love the way you use the name of the show, Todd
Mullican
from Mullican Counseling Center in Edina.
How did he ever come up with that name?
I have no idea. A think tank. He hired a think tank to get together.
A branding company.
Yeah, a branding company. But I just want to say how important it is in the 12 steps. 12 steps, right, George?
There are 12.
Yeah, there are 12. Number 9, making amends to people and asking for forgiveness, telling them you're sorry, and doing it in a way that has timing and tone that sets you up to have the best opportunity to have this thing be fruitful, and just spend lots of time praying about it.
And don't be controlled by the fact that it may not go well.
Ooh,
Todd. Be controlled by the fact that you did what you could in Christ to be reasonable and to bring truth and grace to it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's going to be enough.
How many times have you heard, well, I'd like to apologize, but they're not going to receive it, or they're not going to, they're just going to give me a hard time.
You know, Bill actually talks like that off the air. So
why don't you just quiet down, George, you know? He's bugging me right now.
You know, the other thing is, do I want to be right, or do I want to have a relationship?
Yeah, do I have a need to understand, or do I have a need to win? What is it? Right? Yeah, and that's when we can go in, and that's why it's so great to go to our number one counselor, you know, go to the Holy Spirit and just try to pray for that. But then when we do that, we have to make sure, is this me or is this Holy Spirit? And that's why it's good to have that accountability person, you know, who's really tough. And yeah, because that's so much of it is the attitude you and I bring into those step nines, whether we're either being step nined on or we're doing the step nine. What's my attitude going into it? And that determines a lot about how it'll go.
And the boundary thing.
Yeah. So think of honest conversation. That's what step nine is. And then if it doesn't go well, we go to loving detachment. And then sometimes we have to go to separation and bring a mediator in. I'm not trying to make them still sound nice and easy, but I think it's helpful to have some buoys there, a template, so people don't, because a lot of times the honest conversation doesn't go well and people feel lost for 25 years. You know, versus,
and 25 years can pass, and all of a sudden, 25 years has just passed.
Yeah.
And that's a very sad deal, very scary for sure. So it's an important step, and we are always thrilled, Todd, when you can join the show, and I appreciate your insight, which is always full of scripture and wisdom and humor, and we love it, don't we, George?
Absolutely.
Just nod your head like a parakeet, George. Just keep nodding your head. That's all you got to do.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, yeah, nice to have you here.
It's nice to have
well.
An adult in here, guys.
Well, boy, George, we'll have
boy,
dinner.
George,
boy,
yeah.
George, we'll have dinner, and you can make an amend, and I'll make one to you, and
we'll
part and go our separate ways for a week. Thanks for listening to Real Recovery tonight. So glad you joined us. Hope you learned lots tonight and got some good stuff from the Lord. Have a great week. Good night, everyone. God bless. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.